This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm Tessa Vigeland. The pictures this week have been horrifying. Water everywhere, sand in the streets, houses washed away, the lower half of Manhattan plunged into night after night of darkness. The images have also shown us people swarming grocery stores, snapping up emergency supplies, and fighting over electrical outlets and gasoline. These are clear signs of neighborhoods in crisis, but disaster is also an opportunity to strengthen communities. Dan Ariely is a professor of behavioral economics at Duke University. He joins us now to talk about how we behave when crisis strikes. Welcome.
My pleasure.
So we've heard stories this week about people pulling together, helping each other out, and I'm sure we'd all like to think of ourselves as folks who would behave that way when a disaster occurs. But how long does that altruistic feeling and activity tend to last?
So I think it tends to last quite a long time, and for two reasons. One is that people get to realize how much they depend on other people in such cases. And the second thing is that this is the emerging social norm. So if you think about it, how do you know what's the right behavior? What we usually do is we look at around us and we see how other people are behaving, and we take that as a signal for what appropriate behavior is. And I think given all the nice cases of how people are treating each other so nicely, there's a good chance that other people would watch it, would look at this as the standard norm, and would actually keep on behaving this way. The problem, of course, is that a nice social coordination can very quickly collapse. So if you think about something like riots at soccer games, you know, people are basically behaving nicely, and then all of a sudden one person behaves badly and things start deteriorating. So I think the same thing could happen here, where right now the social norms are quite positive, but if people would start behaving incredibly selfishly, there's a chance that this would deteriorate.
Most people, as we know, simply aren't prepared for a disaster. So one of the first things that they do is they go out and buy as much water and canned tuna and maybe gasoline as they can. I wonder what kind of problems can arise when everyone is fighting over scarce resources, and how does that affect a community?
So when we did an experiment a long time ago in which we walked around the lab and we offered people chocolates, and these were very nice pieces of chocolate, and we wanted to see how many people would take. And what we saw was that everybody just took one piece. A few people took two, nobody took more than two. People took either one or two. And in another condition, we offered them for sale at a reasonable price. And now what happened is that all of a sudden many people wanted to buy everything we had in stock.
Huh.
And the same thing I can imagine happening here. So imagine a supermarket where they're selling water at a particular price versus imagine a community center in which you can come and get water. The prediction is that in the supermarket, the first people would show up would say, hey, this is a commercial world. This is the price of water. Let me get as much of it as possible. But in the second world, where it's a community center, they would say, yes, it's true that I've arrived early, but there are other people who will probably arrive later. Let me think more carefully about what I really need.
We also quite often hear post-disaster about store owners, retailers jacking up their prices. But it doesn't seem like we've heard much about that this time around. Any speculation why that might be?
I think everybody feels like they're in the same boat, you know. So sometimes when disasters happen, store owners decide to take advantage of it and jack up prices, and people, of course, are really outraged. I think in this particular case, the tragedy is so large, everybody feels connected to it. Everybody is suffering to some degree, and taking advantage of your fellow men who are in the same boat probably feels much worse than taking advantage of other people who are you don't feel as connected to.
We've been talking about behavior in the immediate aftermath of a disaster like this, but I wonder long-term effects on a community. You know, once a place like the New Jersey Shore has been identified as so vulnerable to a disaster like this, do people in general tend to get up and leave?
You know, I don't know. I remember when I was a kid growing up in Israel, I would often see things in the U.S., all kinds of disaster, hurricanes and so on, and I would see people who build their homes in the exact same spot that the wind just took their home from.
Yeah.
And it used to amaze me how come people don't leave. And I think the case is that people don't leave. If people feel connected, it's their friends, it's their family, they feel perhaps even more connected to the place after the disaster. After all, it has more memory and more ideology connected to it. So I don't know what the empirical evidence, but I would suggest that it might not be the case that you say to yourself, oh, there was a hurricane, let me fear another one and move. Instead, all of a sudden, the connection to the community and the particular house and the memories and so on might actually become stronger.
Dan Ariely is a professor of behavioral economics at Duke University. Thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure. Talk to you soon.